This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 8th of January, 2024, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Joining me in studio again is Dr. Stephen Arena, and we will continue our discussion about his new book, Towards a Democratic Franchise. Let's get the show started. We're giving away sand dollars again. Every week, six listeners can win 30 digital Bahamian dollars if they get the correct answer and have a digital wallet. When you call in, give the producer your name and cell number and wallet provider. Include wallet provider and custom name in texts. Download a digital wallet right now because every Tuesday and Thursday, you can be a winner. Also, the Sand Dollar merchant list is growing. If you're looking for more places to spend the digital Bahamian dollar, visit sanddollar.bs/merchant list to view a list of verified merchants in New Providence, Grand Bahama, and the Family Islands. If you're a business owner and you'd like to join the Sand Dollar merchant list, contact 302-9880 or sdau@centralbankbahamas.com. One more important notice. Nassau Cruise Port and Zamar Productions presents Phil Stubbs live in concert this Saturday, January the 13th. Also performing, Nishi L.S., and Iris Store in the Spank Band. Tickets, $50 for general admission, $75 for VIP. And tickets are available at BahamasEtickets.com, at the Plantation Bar and Grill in Caves Heights, and Miniso at the Mall at Marathon. Doors open at 7 p.m., showtime 9 p.m. It's going to be a good, good time. And joining me in studio along with Dr. Arena is Mr. C.A. Nuri. Good morning, Mr. Nuri. Producer, I can't hear Mr. Nuri. I don't want him to accuse me of silencing him.
I see you turn off my mic purposefully. You just don't want me joining on this conversation.
Boss, I mean, perhaps.
That's how y'all go.
I'm going to ask my prime minister to respond to that statement. For if anybody is good with poetics,
it
is my prime minister.
What we need to do is pray. And we need to pray that this violence stops. Because prayer changes things.
You know what changes things? Paychecks. Paychecks change things in the Bahamas. And I think the people who are getting paid to produce strategies aimed at reducing and eradicating crime and violence should do their work.
A part of our strategy is prayer.
No. A part of my strategy
is
prayer.
You don't
every
pray.
Morning when I wake up, I pray my car is where I left it last night. Every morning when I wake up, I pray the things that was in my yard last night remain in my yard. And I ain't joking. I pray that the fruit trees are still there. I pray that the concrete tables are still there. I pray that the part of the roof is still there.
So you agree with me? Prayer works.
No. Prayer is my strategy, not their strategy.
It's the national strategy. It's our national strategy. We're going to have a national prayer.
Oh, no.
We're going to join hands and pray this violence away.
I'm going to suggest you don't invite me to the prayer service because I know what I'm praying for.
You're going to disrupt our prayer anyway.
First thing I'm praying for is that somebody figures out how to compel the Minister of National Security to resign.
What you want the National Security Minister to resign for?
Pardon? Sorry, repeat that.
What you want him to resign for?
For not doing his job.
What is his job?
Creating and implementing and enforcing strategies aimed at reducing or eradicating entirely crime and violence.
And you say in prayer, you ain't gonna help with that.
No. See, because the people who pray, they're going to tell you, the poor will always be with us and crime will always be with us. I cannot rely on those people to implement crime strategies because from the break, they tell me, Ms. Green, stop stressing me over my paycheck because crime will always be with us.
What if we bring in all the gang members and talk to them? Ask them not to do it anymore. That's an African strategy. They won't be the government. That's their strategy.
To have a conclave of gang leaders?
And let me talk about it.
And then give them jobs so that they have an alternate economic path?
No, we ain't saying we're giving them jobs.
Because I thought that was a strategy they employed.
We ain't giving them jobs. We're going to talk to them. We're going to negotiate.
Negotiate what?
When and when not to do things.
I pray that that doesn't happen.
See, prayer. There you go.
I pray that that doesn't happen, sir.
There you go.
Anyway.
Go back to that prayer.
In an attempt to address a number of things, we share great concern for the spike in gang violence and violence generally. We have reached a point where we have eight homicides in the space of 7 days. I heard reports of a homicide that I haven't seen reported yet. So I'm not sure if we hit 7 in 7 days, or if we still, if we hit 9 in 7 days, or if we had 8 in 7 days. But before we get into the show, what I do want to say is, first of all, I want to pray for my prime minister. Because he could not be shocked over the murder spree. I want to pray for the Minister of National Security. He can't be shocked over it either. But more importantly, I want to pray that once he resigns, he finds suitable work and does not have to turn to a life of crime himself. Because I'm almost certain that the solutions or the strategies to eradicate crime are based in strategies that also provide equal and equitable access to the various economies that exist in this country. So I hope that he gets a good job after he resigns from this good job, because he don't like this good job. But anyway, I want to get the show started. Before I do that, let me formally and officially call for the resignation of the Minister of National Security. We are on today is day 8, 8th day of January. We've not had a statement from the Minister of National Security on the status of crime in the country. We've not had a formal statement from the Minister of National Security on the status of crime for 2023. We have not had an announcement of a national address from the Prime Minister yet. The only thing he said to us is that we should pray. Surely the Minister of National Security would have provided him with more effective and efficient strategies by now. So before I end this segment, once again call for the resignation of the Minister of National Security. It's about that time. Mr. Nuri.
Yes, ma'am.
Today we talk about, we continue our conversation towards a democratic franchise.
Yes, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. It's one that you sort of started. I have 4 basic questions for Mr. Arana. I'm not sure if we're going to get to all of them. I put them all on the table right now. The first is, let's talk about Black Tuesday. What led to it was the consequence, what happened after. The voting age. So when I went to the presentation that Dr. Arana gave at NAGB on Thursday, a vibrant part of the discussion was focused on election reform and the voting age. And that was a very interesting conversation. Maybe we could delve into that. Third question, who opposed and who supported the push to independence? And then the fourth, what is likely to be the next attempt at election reform based on your study, your research, and the evolution of law up to this point? Good morning, Dr. Arana.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's start. I wanted to start with Black Tuesday because I know that's the question. That's the topic that you put on the table on Friday, Mr. Nuri.
Yes. My first question to you, Dr. Arana, is what is Black Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
And I know what happened. It's not that I'm asking what happened to cause it. be Black Tuesday. But what is it by a definite historian-based definition? And is that term offensive? Because I have a number of persons who say, man, can we find another name for that day? And I'm asking that on juxtaposed to the point of, what is Black Tuesday?
Okay, so I think Black Tuesday is a memory. Black Tuesday is a narrative that we've created in this country. And we know, well, we think we know what happened, right? What ostensibly happened is that the PLP protested alleged gerrymandering by the UBP, first in the House of Assembly and then outside on the street. Now, the interesting thing is even the sort of authoritative seminal textbooks on elections in the Americas claim that the only reason that the Bay Street Boys and the UBP held on to power for as long as they did was gerrymandering. However, until the Constitution of 1964, the House of Assembly did not really have the power to gerrymander. So the only general election where the UBP theoretically had the power to gerrymander was the 1967 election. So if they tried to gerrymander the 1967 election, they did a pretty poor job at it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so 1965, the Constituencies Commission reports to the House saying this is what we want the constituencies to be for the next general election. And then the PLP protests that. The interesting thing is the PLP representative on that commission, a certain A.D. Hanna,
mm-hmm.
had signed off on the report.
Mm-hmm. And then submitted a minority report. Now, let me ask you a question. Espionage isn't the right word. Is it like subterfuge? Did he sign off on the report so as not to raise suspicion and make them think he's going along with it, intending to submit a damning minority report?
Well, let's say it was at least disingenuous. I think from the archival record, what really happened is that in 1965, when all of this took place, the PLP was not concerned about boundaries and constituencies and upcoming elections. What the PLP was concerned about was political theater to demonstrate to London that Nassau, or rather that the Bay Street Boys, weren't capable of responsible government that had been introduced in 1964. What the PLP wanted is for London to suspend the constitution and turn the clock backwards and turn the Bahamas into a crown colony. In other words, what they wanted is they wanted to break the UBP's government regardless of what might come afterwards. On the morning of Black Tuesday, when the PLP was protesting this alleged gerrymandering before the mace flew out of the window and all of the theater, the Premier, Roland Simonet, sent a note to the PLP saying, okay, we'll sort of withdraw the report, let's talk about it, and never got a response because it was, at this point, about theater, not about solving the issue at hand.
Wow.
That's kind of damning.
And for me, it's interesting, right?
I know how I feel.
I mean, yeah, and people should be in a state of, I'm not quite sure how I feel. For me, it makes sense in this way because I will accuse successive governments of performing governance and not actually practicing governance. Absolutely. Let's go on. You said so much just now. I don't want to add my own thoughts to it as much as sort of give it some time to rest. So in that process, A.D. Hanna was a part of the commission or the committee. He signed off on the majority position, but also subsequently submitted a minority report, a dissident, right? He disagreed with them. And then at some point, the colonial office said, we are prepared to engage you in discussion on this matter, But the PLP never responded because they already had another strategy in play that they were prepared to go forward with.
Precisely.
Okay.
And the Colonial Office, in fact, sort of had all the files of the Constituencies Commission sent to London and examined. And basically their verdict was that perhaps this was rushed a bit. But ostensibly, I mean, at the end of the day, there was nothing seriously wrong with the report. The Colonial Office, which was far more progressive and actually throughout the entire period of time extremely critical of the UBP government, couldn't see gerrymandering there. What they saw was perhaps poor craftsmanship, but that's another phenomenon that has plagued Bahamian politics and Bahamian governance. Certainly from the day we got responsible government in 1964, arguably up to the present.
Absolutely. For the audience, we're talking to Dr. Stephen Arana. We're delving into his new book, Towards a Democratic Franchise. Right now, we're talking about Black Tuesday. And I am referencing, and I'm sure Dr. Arana is referencing parts of his book, but we're looking specifically, I think, at if you have the book already, or if you want to go online and search for the open source link to the book to sort of follow the conversation, we're reading from chapter 6 of the book titled Equal Suffrage, right? And that's where I found most of the retelling, recollection, reconciling of what happened with Black Tuesday.
Right? And you say equal suffrage meaning men and women. There's male suffrage, meaning that all men got a chance to vote, and women's suffrage, meaning that women had the opportunity to vote.
Right.
And of course, equal suffrage, meaning that one voter would have one vote and not some voters might have a second or third or fourth
right.
vote.
And quickly explain that, because I'm not sure if everyone is aware that there was dual voting. That's what
right.
you call it?
No. So, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
When you go through the book, there's a chapter on male suffrage.
Okay.
There's a chapter on women's suffrage. And I thought, okay, well, that's it. I wondered, well, where am I going to find Black Tuesday now? But then the next subsequent chapter is equal suffrage. And like he said, that speaks to a practice where some voters could cast multiple votes.
Yes. I just wanted everyone understand that's what it means.
Yeah.
Quick question. I see we have a caller.
Hold on.
Why the term Black Tuesday? We still said, what does that mean? Is that a legal term? Why did we conclude that this could be Black Tuesday?
I just want you all to know that this book is really good and exciting because he's asking Dr. Arana these questions and I want to answer them. Dr. Yeah. Arana.
Go ahead.
Well, Aaron, if you want to answer them,
go on.
From the time the Progressive Liberal Party was founded in 1956, the Progressive Liberal Party styled itself as the party, as the only party in this country to represent the black majority of the population. They painted the UBP as the party representing the white minority, and the couple of smaller parties we had before this two-party system evolved that we know today never really took off and never really fit into this narrative of a sort of world of black and white. So if the PLP is the party that represents the black majority, and if this day of protest against alleged gerrymandering was their day of protest and their day of political theater, then Black Tuesday was the term that they themselves chose to give that event to be commemorated in the national narrative.
Absolutely. Let's go to the caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good, thank you, sir. How are you?
I am very concerned and skeptical about this gentleman's presentation and submission on Black Tuesday. First of all, it was a simple term representing the black majority, hence Black Tuesday. And it was a step towards confirming and consolidating majority rule. The problem I have with your presenter, be he an academic or not, is the fact that he is speculating on things that happened within the party without having any proof of what he is speculating on. You cannot make an assumption that persons, organizations, or individuals came up with a plan as cohesive and as important, as solid as Black Tuesday was to push away the apartheid system that my parents faced and come on the air or write a book and base that book primarily on what I would call pseudo speculation because you want to push a certain agenda. He is trying to rewrite the intention and the actions that happened on that fateful day.
So caller,
speculating from the tone of his voice.
Caller, let's talk. Caller, let's talk. Have you read the book?
Listen.
No, caller, have you read the book?
No, I have.
Caller, I will put you on pause because I would like to have a conversation with you. You've made a very strong statement. As someone who has read the book, I want to talk to you.
I am a student of history.
Have you read the book?
To tune in,
producer, press pause for me. Don't go anywhere. Press pause. So, I've read the book. I want to read for you some of the excerpts so that maybe you could get a sense of where Dr. Arana got his information from. If you'd heard the show on Thursday, we'd spend a lot of time talking about the creation of the book, how it was created, why it was created, where it was created, the dynamics of it. Dr. Arana spent a lot of time in London reading the original copies in the archives. And one of the things that I found interesting is Dr. Arana, he discusses the differences in perspectives on what had happened given by people who were there at the time. So if I could take a producer unmuted. Good morning, caller. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Would you let me read to you something?
Before you get there, let me say this. In my defense,
yes.
I did not read his book. I happened to tune into your show.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am hearing, like everybody else, 99% of your listening audience,
mm-hmm.
what we are hearing is what I could consider a lopsided view to cast dispersions on the genuine intent of the men and women that carried out that action on the day. That is how your guest is coming across.
No, that's how you're receiving what he's saying.
Offensive.
So, thank you very much.
Thanks.
You going to hold on? You don't have to. So let me read the excerpt. Then, according to the Tribune, the following scene unfolded while Pindling spoke. Quote, we tried to lay our cards on the table. We tried to get the Premier to indicate whether he would be prepared to amend the draft. But it appears that it is the intention of government to push this matter through. This only shows that they mean to rule with an iron hand. If this is the intention of government, I can have no part in it. If this is the way you want it, then this is the way you will have it. Close quotes, whereupon he picked up the mace, which he declared is supposed to belong to the people of this country, and threw it through an open window into the crowded square below. Butler followed by hurling the 2 hourglasses out. Pindling and other members present on that day then marched out of the House of Assembly, addressed the demonstrators outside. Within 20 minutes, a magistrate read the riot act and the police dispersed the crowd. In his account, Hughes largely followed the Tribune's reporting and left open the question of whether or not the day's series of events had been planned and scripted by the PLP's leadership. In contrast, Creighton and Saunders tell a slightly different story. I just want to say to you, I just read that straight from the book, so you could get a sense of how the book is written. Dr. Arana has found documentation. It's not his own words. And he presents an argument to you, laying all the pieces on the table. There's an open source link available. I'd like you to buy the book. I think it's every household should have it, like you should have the Constitution, you should have the ABCs of Business, you should have your Book of Faith, you should have this book. But there's an open source, so go online right now and search it. Towards a Democratic Franchise, Dr. Stephen B. Arana, right? He went to London. He's reading straight from the records that are the official records, documented information. The next thing I want to say before we continue the conversation is, you think the PLP can tell you their fishes stink?
So acting, Dr. Arana, is it important to do a critical analysis on such topics, like on a Black Tuesday, to have a comprehensive appreciation of what it is, what it means to different people? The caller mentioned that it was important for Black people. It was a Black movement. But did white people vote for the PLP? Was it a only Black movement? Historical-wise, did the PLP make overtures to white Bahamas, even Red Bahamas, Long Island Red, Spanish Well Bahamians? I want to know if that happened or it was racial, one set versus the next.
Well, it's a definite yes and no answer. If you look at the history of the Progressive Liberal Party, you have your answer about Long Island right there.
Because who founded the PLP?
Right. But I think, to answer your first question, I think there's a sort of misunderstanding about what history as an academic discipline is, right? Too many people view history as a sort of series of events where it's important to remember who did what on what day.
Mm-hmm.
And history as an academic discipline doesn't just ask who did what on which day, but tries to ascertain why they did it and which consequences that had in the immediate aftermath, in the midterm, and in the long term. And in the long term, that sort of boils down to the national narrative, as in how do we as Bahamians today remember our history?
Mm-hmm.
And every generation will reevaluate its history, which explains why once upon a time there was a statue of a certain Spanish-Italian sailor man in front of Government House, and why it's not there today anymore, and why very few people want it back. Mm-hmm. Right? All of that is part of history. Now, one thing I'd like to say to the gentleman on the phone is that not only did Ms. Green just read to you the passage from my book where I try to present the version of Colin Hughes, the version of Gail Saunders and Michael Creighton, essentially going back to presenting the version that Lyndon Pinling told his supporters. But in that passage, every sentence, or at least every other sentence, has a small footnote at the end.
Yes, absolutely.
And in a history book, these are probably more important than anything I can say on the radio now, because these footnotes are references, and every single one of these references points you to the exact page of either a book written by another historian, or in most instances in my book, will point you to the exact page of an official file contained in the archives. So if you don't want to take my word for it, go to the archives, give them the call number. In most of these cases, the National Archives in Nassau may have a copy of it, but the originals are all, unfortunately, in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But with those references, it's a matter of minutes to get them, and the National Archives in the UK, unfortunately, you have to pay for it, but would even digitize it for you and email it to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go to this next caller, and then let's get back on the track, because that's a whole nother conversation that I'd love to get into. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, morning, Aaron. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, it's as I was tuning into the show, was just something what Dr. Arna said just now. It really is the thing what I believe of a lot of local Bahamian historians and a lot of people who endeavor into history, because it's just reading what happened and then cross-referencing. And like he said, looking at footnotes and going back to see how those researchers, what their findings were.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems what we have, especially with documents being kept in the UK, we have the credibility now that I think is being put in question by a lot of these historians that is not of African descent. We have seen a lot of inconsistencies. We have seen a lot of straight-up mistruths being told on a grand level that actually shape the mentalities and identity of the Indians. And we find their credibility to be invalid And in a lot of cases, like straight up in complete opposite direction of what we know and understand to be the truth factually. So my greatest concern, especially with history and who's being taught it and how it is being taught and who is teaching it, is that we need to have a different persuasion, in my view, that is not funded by the UK or America, and have that information presented. And then let's have all historians actually debate the validity. Because with the information we have now, the problem is that the people that first presented it to us just presented it filled and riddled with mistruths. And that is my bias.
I really appreciate that argument. And I'll say to you, it's a matter of trust. It's a matter of trust. I don't want you to think that I'd be in flippant with your commentary, though, caller, right? What you say is sound. And then I say to you, right, in this rendering, in this rereading of Bahamian history, I got a couple of questions for you. To what extent has the PLP documented this history themselves? To what extent has the state documented this history themselves? And then ask yourself this question. Why wouldn't they? Why would this not be the thing to document themselves? What are the reasons why they potentially have not documented it, do not see it as important to document? See, I with you is a matter of trust. And what I want to say is now, while I agree with you with the broader sentiment that you shared, let's apply it to the current day situation. And are you telling me, as a Bahamian, without reading the book at all, that you trust the PLP over what's in this book, even with Dr. Arana telling you what his sources for the book are? I just throwing that on the table. Before I go to the next call, let me throw out a link for listeners if they want to access the open source copy of this book for the purposes of this conversation, as you prepare to buy it in hard copy. So I'm going to read off a series of numbers and letters. This is the link. You're going to just put this into Google and a link will come up and you can follow one or two links. I think I saw at least two links will come up where you can follow to the open source. Are you ready? Capital letter B, space. Capital letter K, 329. Oh, we have a different one. Okay. My bad. We're getting a different link. That's a super handy link. I had Dr. Aaron is going to pull that up right now. Let's go to the next caller, producer. Caller, you on the clock?
Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How you do?
Good. Congratulations to your newly minted author, Dr. Aaron.
Our Bahamian, our newly minted author. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, as in terms of your your hosting,
thank
but
you so
yes,
much.
As the Bahamian, our newly minted author. And I am really appreciative of the work that he's done and the debate that it will spark, because a part of progress is having the kind of debate that we're having and provoking the various perspectives that has already emerged in terms of reaction. Mm-hmm. Because out of it, unless we have debates like the ones that I'm sure his book will provoke, we're not going to progress as a society. Having said that, I will be very interested in buying the book. I'm going to get it. I myself have a book coming out soon on 50 years of Bahamian history, so I would definitely be very interested in gobbling down his views and what his research has uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
The history of the Bahamas, in terms of majority rule, the women's suffrage movement, and Black Tuesday, and all of those really pivotal events, needs to be thrusted further into the forefront of our discourse, because a lot of Bahamians, the younger generations, are really lost when it comes down to having even the basic grasp of what these things mean. And as a society, we're so much weaker when we don't know our history even on the basic level. But appreciative to Dr. Arna for the level that he's bringing it out right now. I'm going to get the book and read it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to read the link before we go to a break, producer. Go to a break. Catch myself. Okay, here we go. It's a bit long. Here's the link. www.lhlt.mpg.de/325-0936/G=PDF. And I will, at the end of the shows today, I will post this link on the Guardian Radio Facebook page. All right, I'll post the link there so that people can also access it. Got another caller, producer? Okay, let's take this call before we go to a break. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You gone? I'm sorry we didn't catch you. 1, 2, 3. You hear the music. We got to take a quick break. I got to catch my breath. I'm looking at 75,000 words in front of me right now. It's a very interesting discussion as well as a very interesting book. You're on the clock. We'll be right back.
Nassau Cruise Port presents Phil Stubbs Live at the all-new Nassau Cruise Port Amphitheater.
January 13th.
Gates open at 7 p.m., showtime 9 p.m.
Book your tickets now at BahamasETickets.com.
General admission $50, $75 VIP.
Prepare to be blown away as we kick things off with one of the Bahamas' beloved artists. You're raking and scraping with Ira Store, Nishi LS, and Phil Stubbs Live.
Sponsored by Kalik and Ron Ricardo. Nassau Cruise Port, the place to be.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Joining me this morning are both Mr. C.A. Newry and Dr. Stephen B. Ariner, the author of the new book, Towards a Democratic Franchise. We've been delving into Chapter 6 of the book on equal suffrage. We've actually been focused on Black Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We got a call. I know you want to say something.
And especially how Black Tuesday, the celebration of it, is on Wednesday. So that's why I find it significant. But what I'm so impressed with this book is the various footnotes.
Right.
Like Dr. Ariner went in detail, the cut and paste, to include where you can find the references from it. And then to have a response or a commentary from UK, the Colonial Office, mm-hmm. included in the book itself, is impressive to know. Say, oh, this is what they thought about us. This is what they were saying about what is happening in the Bahamas.
It's also helpful, right? It builds the broader context.
Yes, the broader context.
And like Dr. Ariner said, the reading of history is a comparison of notes, right? And you reconcile what it is that people have said to ascertain almost like a common thread. And the book contains not just his own thoughts, but actual source material from the actors at play.
I know we're going to the call right now, right?
Yeah.
But the PLP has been critiqued that Black Tuesday is their holiday and that the wider the Bahamas does not celebrate it. I was beating Dr. Ariner whether white Bahamians can celebrate this holiday also. Like, right. What does it mean with the term Black Tuesday in the narrative, and whether the PLP coming into power also empowered the wider Bahamas? Because I know in history books, they said that various varying behemoths were disenfranchised, right? They had poor white behemoths who say, man, I vote in PLP.
Right.
Right. I want to know that narrative. And then, that narrative included.
And then as you ask that, right, I would ask, who did the PLP belong to, right? Because at that time, I just imagine everybody who wasn't UBP or directly from Britain would have been PLP at that time. So this idea of, really? Is it, I'm just saying, I want to throw it out on the table.
Remember Bradley Roberts voted UBP?
I see, that's, but that's a
the women, them voted UBP.
That's a other side of it, right? You're talking about black people with an affiliation to UBP. We're talking about European descent people with an affiliation to the PLP. And so was it the same? You had some people, some European descent people, whether they Long Island red or Eleuterio yellow or Abaco white, they were aligned with the PLP when you would have expected them to just wake up and say, I breed UBP.
Well, the first thing I actually have to say, I think, Nuri, you just, I think, confused Black Tuesday and Majority Rule Day.
Thanks.
Because they're commemorating different things, and Black Tuesday, to the
you
best of my
right. Forgive me.
To the best of my knowledge, is not a public holiday in the country.
Right, right.
Yet.
Right. You're absolutely right. Forgive me, yes.
Now, the other thing is, there were a couple of other parties during that time, right?
Yeah.
Now we essentially have a two-party system, the PLP and the FNM. I'm not going to go into the third and fourth and what have you parties right now. For the past, I don't know how many decades, only those two have been relevant. Before this two-party system emerged, there were attempts to have other parties. Many Bahamians saw the PLP as too radical and the UBP as too conservative, and they tried to have something in the middle. There was a National Democratic Party, a Bahamian mm-hmm. Democratic Party. There were others. So I think it's hard to say this party belonged to one group, this party belonged to another group. And I think the biggest paradox that we have to wrap our minds around is that the UBP was not this monolithic bloc as which it is being perceived today. The UBP had at least two very different wings. One was ultra-conservative, reactionary, all those bad things you would attribute to it and for which we remember the UBP today. The other side of the party, I would characterize as far more pragmatic and to a small extent even perhaps progressive. I would argue, for instance, that had it not been for Sir Roland Simonet's support, women's suffrage would not have been passed in 1961.
Who led the charge for women's suffrage?
The women.
The women led.
Okay, the women led the
charge.
And
this is PLP women, right?
No, this is Bahamian women.
What?
There's Bahamian women from all over the place. In fact, the women's suffrage movement was founded by the wife of a Bay Street boy losing what? Candidate. And she said, if my good husband had the support of women at the polls, he would have won.
Oh, yes.
So it was Bahamian women who led the charge. But it was to a large extent the UBP who ostensibly supported them, but it was also Sir Roland Simonet who facilitated towards the end the passing of the bill. And the UBP was so split that at one point Sir Roland's very own son, Bobby Simonet, went to London and attempted to stage a coup against his father and have him ousted.
What?
From power here in the Bahamas.
Now, is that in the book?
That's
or is
in the book. No, that's in the book. That's in the book. And it's referenced. And
I ain't gonna stop reading this book.
You can go exactly to
Bobby
the page.
Bobby was a monster.
Look at the reference, and you will find the reference leading you to a file in the National
Who's
Archives.
Who's daddy?
Showing you that. So the UBP.
FNM.
The UBP was really at least two different heads of the same serpent.
You want to go to the caller or you got to
listen,
go to
okay, we're going to the caller. Caller, I see you there. Good morning, caller.
Going once.
Carly, you still there?
Go ahead, Aaron. Go ahead.
I breathe in. Everybody take a deep breath. Okay. Towards a democratic franchise, suffrage reform in the 21st century Bahamas, written by Dr. Stephen B. Ariner. So we've been focused on chapter 6, equal suffrage. Now, which chapter we can find this story about the coup? I got to read.
I would have to look that up again. Okay. I mean, it's 320 pages. I don't remember.
That's okay.
Which page everything so, is on.
He's a teacher. Go read the book.
The good thing is the PDF, you can search for things.
Exactly. Yes, yes.
I want to ask, in terms of the planning of Black Tuesday, the turn order of the mates, the turn order of the hourglass. I had a text, hopefully Aaron can find it so you can read. Was this orchestrated by Cecil Wallace Whitfield? Or was it done by, like, because I heard a narrative that Cecil Wallace Whitfield was not even aware of what was happening, which resulted into the split, right? And I wanted, like, he was not included in the planning. And I wanted to know that who were the proponents who said, man, we're going to plan a boycott, we're going to throw the mace, we're going to throw the hourglass. Who all was involved in that?
And then, to end it, because we only got 4 minutes left.
What?
Whose PLP was it? Who's PLP? Because for the next few days and Wednesday, we're going to talk about how the PLP is Pinling is the father of the country, and PLP is Pinling's baby. Whose PLP is it?
Oh, what time, mate?
As you answer the question. Yeah, that's just at the very end.
Okay. Black Tuesday was orchestrated. And I think the best book to read about the planning of Black Tuesday is actually Michael Creighton's biography of Sir Lyndon Pinling. That's where you will find the most detailed account of how the PLP planned Black Tuesday and how the PLP planned the response to Black Tuesday. And without a doubt, the sort of leading heads at that time obviously were Lyndon Pinling and Milo Butler, who threw things out of windows. But I think we must not underestimate the role of A.D. Hanna in the PLP during the 1960s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to read the book. I'm going to read more. I like to declare all my biases. I'm the person who will say loudly, I can't wait for the day for Glenys Hannah Martin to pick up A.D. Hanna's good PLP and take it somewhere it'll flourish. But that's just I'll be honest with you, that's just a feeling. Right now I could go into the book and see if my feeling is kind of correct. Right? And get the sense of some sources.
I just want to say, if you want a quick download of this book, we need a book again, Aaron.
Towards a Democratic Franchise, Suffrage Reform in the 20th Century Bahamas by Dr. Stephen B. Ariner.
You can go to arana.mybahamas.org. That's Ariner, A-R-A-N-H-A dot mybahamas.org. And just download it quickly.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
That's much shorter than the link I have.
Much shorter than the link. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Courtesy of C. Allen Johnson, of course.
Absolutely. Caller, good morning.
College ages and stock in Oyster Leone with you and your guest, Aaron.
Good morning, Bremen. How you do?
I'm holding. Thank
you. You got 30 seconds.
We need justice, law, and order in the Bahamas here. But what I want to ask, Mr. Arana, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Arana, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm holding, thank God. My first question is, are you an Arana from Keys and Zoes?
All the Aranas in this country are related.
Good. Now, my question is, right? Now, when it comes to Tuesday. Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not know, or do you have within your book where Black Tuesday originated from? Because, from my understanding, it originated from some labor to do. And I've spoken to one of the gentlemen before he died. He used to live, Mr. Johnson, used to live on Lewis Street.
What's Mr. Johnson's first name?
Oh, I don't recall right offhand, but if I put myself out of the way, I can get that.
Okay.
But he was a carpenter, carpenter foreman, some of that sort. But Mr. Arana.
Yes.
Go ahead.
My question really is, do you have the origin of the name Black Tuesday?
I don't have that in my book. I mean, as a historian, of course, I'm tempted to always think of Black Tuesday as being referencing the stock market crash in the United States in 1929.
Right, I do answer. But what I'm saying is,
it did not come across in the archive
record. Before I go, it's not really, it was not established by or because of politics. If you do some
quickly,
research on that, you will find the reason for that, how that had been established.
Brayman,
what you was going to say, Neary?
Quickly, I ran out of time and I want to hear what you're saying.
Brayman, from last week Thursday, we figured we need to figure out how to get this book in an audio form. Papa already put it on the table. I can figure that out so you can also hear the book yourself.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay.
One good day to you, Papa.
Thank you, Brayman. All right, Mr. Neary. We got no time left. Let's repeat the link for the open source. Repeat the link for the book.
You can do that right now, but you do your wrap-up so I can find it again.
Dr. Arana, I want to thank you. I'm going to have to ask you to continue this conversation via Zoom once you return, once you leave us. Return to the land of snow and cold days. We apologize for that. We couldn't create a multinational agreement to send you some sun up there in Germany. It's been a fascinating conversation. The book is a great read. I want to say thank you for writing it.
Thank you for reading it.
It's taken you, 5, 6, 7 years of work, and then the work that you've done to prepare yourself to get to this place, to do the doctorate. We say thank you very much for contributing to the collective Bahamian consciousness, to our collection of works about ourselves. It's so important. And you all are right. It's a matter of trust. Read the book and see if you could trust it, but you got to read it first.
Yes, and that link again is arana.mybahamas.org. That's ARANHA.mybahamas.org. And I'll take you directly to the book, that free download of the book there.
Mr. Neary, thank you for joining me this morning.
And if you want this in audio,
it's already in audio.
C. Allen Johnson, my inbox, and he'll put an audio automatically for you.
Thank you, C. Allen Johnson. I can make them pay you a little stipend for it. Thank you very much, C. Allen Johnson. Dr. Arana, thank you as well. Wonderful conversation. To all of the callers, thank you for the critical engagement. Pick up a copy of the book and let's continue talking about it.
Okay. Thank you and have a good day.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Neary is up next.